Okay, so I guess there have been several talks in this workshop about countable Borel equivalence relations. And so there has been really quite a lot of progress in the last few years in understanding the structure of countable Borel equivalence relations. But also at the same time, there are some basic old problems in this area, which has been around for some time and of which very little progress has been made until now. So I would like to talk about some of them. These are quite well known to people working in the area. On the other hand, most of them are so simple to state that I hope that they will attract the attention of other people. So so let me just briefly review definitions. This has been given many, many times. So I'm working always on a poly space, an equivalence relation. Borel means that it is a Borel subset of the product space. Countable means that every equivalence class is countable. And here is a list of examples. E0 is the equivalence relation on binary sequences of eventual equality. For instance, the shift relation on binary sequence indexed by the integers. And more generally, if you take a countable group acting in a Borel way on a poly space X, there's an associated equivalence relation given by the orbits of the action, and this is clearly a countable Borel equivalence relation. Sometimes countable equivalence relations are not given in any natural way that we know of by actions, and a typical example of that is a Turing equivalence relation on binary sequences, two binary sequences being Turing equivalent if each one can be computed from the other. This is obviously a countable equivalence relation because there are only countably many algorithms that you can use to compute things. But as far as we know, it's not given in any natural way by an action of a countable group. However, there's a general theorem that says that due to Feldman and Moore, that says that every countable Borel equivalence relation is induced by Borel action of a countable group. So at the general sort of abstract level, every countable equivalence relation can be viewed as given by countable group action. And this, of course, illustrates the fact that this area is intimately tied up with other areas like ergodic theory, if we study, of course, group actions. Okay, of course, there's the basic notion, there's a notion of a hierarchical structure on general equivalence relations, in particular countable ones, and this is the concept of Borel reducibility, which again has been defined and used many times in this workshop, so I will not say much about it. And then we have E is reducible to F means the Borel function, so that two things are equivalent in the first space, if and only if they're imaged are equivalent in the second space, and this gives rise to the concept of bireducibility when each one can be reduced to the other, and the strict relation whereby E can be reduced to F, but not the other way around. So the simplest countable equivalence relations are, of course, those for which you can find a Borel selector. These are called smooth or tame, and there isn't really much further you can say about them in this context. So what is the next more complicated class of countable Borel equivalence relations? These are the so-called hyperfinite ones. So a hyperfinite everything is a countable equivalence relation here. So a hyperfinite equivalence relation is one which can be written as an increasing union of finite equivalence relations. A finite equivalence relation being one in which every equivalence class is finite. Without any loss of generality in this, this turns out to be actually equivalent in the context of countable equivalence relations to saying that you can write that as an increasing union of smooth equivalence relations. So it's kind of the first level just above smoothness. It's crucial, however, to realize that you have to consider increasing unions, and not just, increasing sequence, and not just arbitrary sequence, because you can really write every countable equivalence relation as a union of a countable family of finite equivalence relations. So the crucial aspect here is the fact that it's an increasing sequence. This can be also characterized nicely as those equivalent foundations induced by a Z action. And in terms of understanding their structure up to bioreducibility, things are quite nice. There's only one. Forgetting about smooth ones, for which we are not really much interested, there's only one non-smooth hyperfinite equivalence relation up to bioreducibility, which may, so you may as well take that to be eventual equality of binary sequences, let's say easier. So up to this notion of equivalence, there's only one. So in some sense, one understands quite a lot their structure. There's actually a complete classification of hyperfinite equivalence relations up to Borel isomorphism as well. So in some sense, you know them all completely. However, there's some very basic problems about it which are open, and here's one of them, the so-called union problem. Suppose you take an increasing sequence of hyperfinite equivalence relations. Is the union hyperfinite? So instead of starting with finite ones, you take the union, which would be by definition, if you went hyperfinite, what happens if you start with a sequence of increasing sequence of hyperfinite equivalence relations? Is the union hyperfinite? This is motivated by an old result in ergodic theory, which basically says that the answer is yes if you neglect sets of measure zero. So almost everywhere, these things, you know, on a set of measure one, this is going to be hyperfinite. But it's not known in the Borel category, it's not in the Borel context. So it's a very elementary sort of problem, which you can almost sort of describe in the man in the street, let's say, but it's open. Okay, the next sort of type of question is that, as we saw, the hyperfinite equivalence relations can be characterized as those which are given by actions of the group Z. So the next type of question is the following. What kind of groups, countable always, I mean, we saw that every countable equivalence relation is given by a group action. So which groups produce only hyperfinite equivalence relations? In other words, what kind of groups gamma have the property that no matter what action you look at, this action can be induced also by a Z action? So there is a restriction here, which you realize by sort of, it's a sort of, again, one of the sort of folklore type results. I don't know who noticed that first, but goes back a long time, is that if a group gamma has this property, then it must be amenable. So if you have non-amenable groups, they have non-hyperfinite, they induce non-hyperfinite actions. So here is a natural problem, is that this class of groups, and that was raised by Ben Devise quite a long time ago, I mean, in the mid-80s, I suppose, or something like that. The problem is, if a group gamma is amenable, is it always true that every equivalence relation it induces is hyperfinite? So what is known about this problem? More recently, I mean, in the early 90s, I guess, Weiss proved that the answer is positive for finite products of Z. And then that was eventually generalized by Jackson, Luan, myself, who showed that the answer is positive for every finitely generated group of polynomial growth. And these are by this result of it's known to be the same as the nilpotent by finite groups by result of Gromov. So this is the limit of our knowledge today. It's not known for anything else. For example, the problem is open for abelian groups. It's not the finitely generated, of course. Finitely generated is taken care by this. So is it true that any abelian group, non-finitely generated, of course, gives rise always to hyperfinite equivalence relations? That's equivalent to say that, of course, for the free group, which is the infinite sum of Z's, which is the same thing as the multiplicative group of the positive rationals. So you can, if you know, you ask, sort of, this is sort of the limit of the knowledge. Does this group always give hyperfinite equivalence relations? And if you think of this group as being the multiplicative group of the positive rationals, especially an instance of that is quite amusing. Some would say it as the next problem is commensurability. of positive real hyperfinite. Now, what's the action here? The action is just the action by multiplication of the positive rations on the positive reals. The equivalence relation is simply two reals are equivalent in this action exactly when the ratio is rational. Is that equivalence relation hyperfinite? This is, I think, particularly amusing because in some sense you can almost argue that this equivalence relation is maybe one of the most ancient in the history of mathematics. It goes back to the Pythagoreans or something. Right? So it is, in some sense, one of the oldest sort of equivalence relations probably ever looked at in some form or another. So because of that, I sort of once, a few years ago, I offered 10,000 drachmas to anybody who can solve this problem. And this sounds like a lot of money, but of course now you calculate and figure out this is worth 30 euros. So it's all right. Oh, yes, the answer is yes. Oh, yes, it's true for the additive rationals. No, no, but I mean the result about the polynomial, because it's an increasing union of z's, basically, so they have fixed degree.
More than finite degenerate.
Oh, yeah, the result, yes, but it's kind of like an epsilon.
Okay.
Yes, yes. I mean, it follows on the same. Yes, yeah, you're right, yeah, I cheated a little bit.
You didn't say it,
yes, no, thanks. Yeah, the actual group Q is in the category of groups for which we know the result, although it's not finally generated, but the reason is that. But not the multiplicative. Okay. So, now, one sort of interesting problem here in this context is to define the concept of amenability for equivalence relations. So, one way to define what does it mean for a countable equivalence relation to be amenable is to say to sort of take, I mean, what you want to do is find an analogous definition with the definition of an amenable group. So an amenable group can be defined as saying it's a group which admits an invariant finitely additive probability measure. So what would be the analog for equivalence relation? You say an equivalence relation is amenable if you can put on each equivalence class a finitely additive probability measure defined on all its subsets, which depends, I mean, you can do that trivially, you can put, but you want to say that it depends in a nice way for when you move from class to class. It will, in some sense, given a point x, the function that takes x to the finitely added measure you assign to the equivalence class of x has to be nice. Otherwise, of course, it's trivial. You can always use the axiom of choice and do that. Now, the trouble is that finitely additive probability measures are not very nice objects. As we saw, I guess it was mentioned several times before, if you view them as sort of as functions from subsets of omega into of the natural numbers into 2, they are not, don't have the property of Bayer, so they can't be Borel, really. So that sort of, this can be turned into some appropriate definition if you require that this dependence is not Borel, but universally measurable, but that's not quite in the Borel category. So there are sort of some foundational difficulties, so to speak, here. So here's sort of one proposal that we made in a paper with Jackson and Louvaux for sort of producing some notion of amenability which stays in the Borel category. And instead of using the definition of amenability for groups in terms invariant finitely additive measures, we use sort of approximations of those which are really countably additive measures, which are therefore weights. So there is this characterization: a group is amenable if there's a sequence of weights. L1 functions non-negative. You assign a weight to its group element, which is almost invariant, in the sense that when you take any group element and you take the L1 norm of the difference, where this is the shifted weight by gamma, this goes to zero as n goes to infinity. So you can sort of start with this as a guide here, try to come up with a definition of amenability for countable equivalence relations. And what do you want this concept to have, what kind of properties you want this to have. Well, first of all, it has to include every example of an equivalence relation that should morally be called amenable. It should have nice closure properties. Amenable groups have nice closure properties, increasing, I mean, closed and increasing unions, et cetera, et cetera. So the analogs for equivalence relations have to be true. And based, you know, with sort of this in mind, you try to sort of take this kind of definition and transfer it to equivalence relations, but then you realize it's a bit too restrictive because the concept of a limit here is a little bit too restrictive. So here's sort of the proposed definition. I will describe what this is in a second. Let me call Frechet sub-alpha the alpha-th iteration of the Frechet filter where alpha is a countable ordinal. The Frechet filter is simply the cofinite set, the set of all cofinite subsets of the integers. And then there's a canonical notion of iteration of filters where you use the Fubini definition to define what does it mean to take the product of two filters or three filters, etc. And then there's a notion of, you know, how do you define the omega iteration, the limit iterations, which is sort of similar. So there's a way of iterating the Frechet filter up to every transfinite ordinal less than omega 1. And then you sort of transfer the day definition, and you say that a countable equivalence relation is alpha amenable, where alpha is a countable ordinal, if there's a sequence Fn, which is a function of Borel functions from the equivalence relation to the reals, non-negative Borel functions. So for each x, Fn super x, which is the section, gives you a weight for every element in the equivalence class of x. So that's how you want to think of it. It's a Borel way of assigning, given an x, a weight to the equivalence class of x in such a way that when you take another representative of the same equivalence class, so you take a y equivalent to x, the two things are going to zero. I mean, the difference between these weights goes to zero, but not with respect to the ordinary limit, which would be the limit with respect to the Frechet filter, but with respect to the iterated limit, alpha iterated limit. So you allow a sort of a looser notion of a limit here. And it turns out that with this definition, every example which is can be considered amenable is indeed alpha amenable for some alpha. And moreover, these things have very nice closure properties. When you take the collection of all alpha amenable things for an arbitrary cardinal ordinal and alpha, these are closed under increasing unions, et cetera, et cetera. So let me sort of draw this picture here. For example, if you start just by Day's characterization, it's straightforward to see that if you start with an amenable group and you look at an action of it, then the corresponding equivalence, the orbital equivalence you get, is one amenable. Because you sort of, you know, in the Day definition, by the way, for groups, it doesn't matter whether you put one or alpha. It's going to give you the same class of groups. But when you look at the equivalence relations, it's going to lead to the problems that I will talk about. So we have this collection of equivalence relations, the simplest non-smooth ones, hyperfinite, are containing all the things that are induced by amenable groups, and we don't know if they are the same right now. These are containing the one amenable equivalence relations, which are containing the two, which are containing the three, which are containing the alpha. So you have this increasing hierarchy. And as I said, this hierarchy has nice closure properties if you take it all together. And then we call something Frechet amenable if it's alpha amenable for some alpha. And we take this to be sort of a proposal for a Borel definition of amenability. Okay, for example, it can be seen that if you have an increasing union, increasing sequence of alpha amenable equivalence relations, and you take the union is unamenable at the next level, alpha plus one amenable. So, for example, an increasing union of a sequence of hyperfinite equivalence relations, which are one amenable, is going to be two amenable. And of course, all right, you give the definition, but there's an obvious problem. Is this a real hierarchy? So that's the next problem I want to state. Does this hierarchy collapse? Are all these things the same? This is the generalization of the previous problem. Is hyperfinite the same as given by an amenable group? So now we have this increasing hierarchy of classes, but the basic problem here is that is it a real hierarchy or is it collapsed? Is it something which is for some and really hyperfinite? This is a generalization of the previous problem. And again, there is some motivation behind that, which is that the Kohn-Feldman-Weiss theorem in ergodic theory says that the answer is yes if you neglect measure zero sets. And of course, the answer is yes, if you neglect first category sets, because as it's a corollary of a result that Benjamin talked about in about generic dynamics, that almost everywhere with respect to category, neglecting first category thing, everything is hyperfinite, whether it's a Mann number or not. Every kind of equivalence relation is hyperfinite on a density delta. So almost everywhere with respect to measure category, the answer is yes, but this doesn't tell us whether it's always yes. Okay, so what's a canonical example of a non-amenable equivalence relation? Well, anything that's given by an non-trivial action of a free group with two generators. So if you take a free group with two generators acting freely, and non-trivial means here that it has an invariant probability measure. Non-trivial means two things. First of all, it acts freely, and second, it has an invariant measure. These two conditions together imply that the corresponding equivalence relation is not amenable for any ordinal alpha. So that's going to give us the canonical example of something which is non-amenable. So now you sort of become emboldened and you propose a really ambitious problem. Namely, which if you can solve positive, it's going to solve every other problem that I mentioned before. So you can, I don't want to be too optimistic, but in any case, it shows the limits of our knowledge, so it's good to sort of know what we don't know. So there's something called the von Neumann conjecture, which apparently is not due to von Neumann, it's due to Dayer. It says that every group which is either amenable or it contains a copy of the free group with two generators. That was proved false, of course, by Olshansky. So you try to imitate the von Neumann conjecture. Is there an analog of the von Neumann conjecture in the context of equivalence relations? So there are many ways to formulate, there are a couple of other ways to formulate that, which also lead to very interesting problems, but I'm not going to go into those. I will go into one way of formulating a von Neumann type conjecture, which is relevant to this line of problems. So, question, is the following dichotomy true? Given a countable Borel equivalence relation, one of the two things happens. Either is hyperfinite, or there is a free action of F2 on some space X admitting an invariant probability measure, so it's a non-trivial action, in particular it's not amenable, which can be reduced to that. Because the concept of amenability is closed downwards under reducibility, this would imply, if true, of course, it would imply that every alpha amenable equivalence relation is hyperfinite because it couldn't be in that context. Because if he was amenable but not hyperfinite, this would happen, and therefore that would be amenable, and this can be amenable. So this is a super ambitious problem. If you solve it, you show that the hierarchy collapses. This solves in particular the increasing union problem. It shows that every amenable group gives hyperfinite equivalence, they use everything. So, it's too ambitious. And on the other hand, it's open. I mean, so we don't know that sort of super ambitious thing. But there's no counterexample, as far as I know. And in some sense, if there's anybody sane enough to try, or insane enough to try to attempt to prove something like that, you better sort of start choosing a candidate for an action to prove their theorem. I mean, this is sort of some action. Where this action can come from? When I sort of raised this kind of problem a long time ago in a more particular form in which I sort of put for two some particular actions, and so in some sense a natural candidate for two would be really to look at something that has a combinatorial nature, otherwise it's hopeless to try to attempt such a problem. And a natural candidate for two would be to try actions, free actions of the free group by Lipschitz automorphisms. By three automorphisms. And these are exactly actions which are modular in the sense that Greg talked about. Now there's a glimmer, so a tiny little glimmer of hope here, because Greg's result, in the first day of this workshop, was that these actions are not as complicated as arbitrary actions of F2. The most complicated action of F2 is the shift action. And the result is that, from the point of view of reducibility, these three automorphic actions are strictly simpler. So it's not, So it'd be interesting to solve this problem one way or the other. Now, the final step here is to look at the most complicated class of equivalence, kind of equivalence relations. These are the so-called universal ones. These are the ones, there is a kind of equivalence relation which every other one can be reduced to, and this is called universal. It's not unique as an equivalence relation, but it's unique up to by reducibility according to the definition. And here is an example of a universal equivalence relation. Simply look at the shift action of F2 and look at the corresponding equivalence relation. That is an instance of a kind of equivalence relation which is universal. But here is an interesting point. If you look, so here I'm looking at the action of F2 acting by shifts from 2 to the F2, but I really look at the whole space, all the binary sequence induced by F2. And then, of course, obviously this action is not free, because, for instance, a constant function is going to not change by any group element. I mean, there are lots of fixed points here. So you say, all right, you're too generous. I mean, if you are sort of especially an ergodic theorist, you say, look at the free part of the action. Now, look at the elements of the space which are moved by every non-identity element. Almost everywhere, I mean, almost every point in the space with respect to the usual product measure is going to be an x. So from the point of view of ergodic theory, this is everything. However, not from the point of view of Borel theory, because if you restrict yourself to the free part, you get an equivalence relation which is not universal. It's not hyperfinite, it's not universal, it's something which is in between. So that follows from sort of work that Scott Adams has done about triable equivalence relations, because this, if you restrict to the free part, it's a triable equivalence relation. So, and then we sort of looked around and noticed that there are lots of examples of countable Borel equivalence relations which are triable. And then we looked around them and turned out that none of them seem to be coming from free actions of any group, not the free group. The free group can't do that. So here's the next question. Is it possible for a free action of any countable group whatsoever to produce a universal equivalence relation? Is it possible to find a Borel equivalence relation which is universal and it's given by free action of the group? Is freeness compatible with universality? Seems to be unknown. What would be a possible candidate for that, for a positive answer to that? It would be to take simply a group of permutations of the integers, countable group of permutations of the integers, look at it as a subgroup of the symmetric group, and look at the translation action. Let's say the right translation action. That's obviously a free action. If you can find such a group, for which it gives you a universal one, that would do it. Now, what did I? So, in particular, you can try to look at this big subgroup of the permutation, which are simply the recursive permutations, the ones that can be computed. And I'll explain why I want to look at these in particular. Oh, but, of course, any kind of group that you can find is fine. So you can ask, let me ask a more precise question here. Is the equivalence relation used by the right translation action of the recursive permutations universal or not? And the reason that I'm looking in particular in the context of recursive permutations is the following. Let's consider in general the action of this group of recursive permutations by right composition on the space X to the N. You just shift N according to R. So this gives an action, you have an action of R or of any group of permutations on the space X to the N. The particular interest for people working, for instance, in recursion theory, is the case x, for instance, one particular case, the case x equals 2, in which case this equivalence relation is simply what's called recursive isomorphism in recursion theory. Two binary sequences or two subsets of the natural numbers are recursively isomorphic, means that one can be obtained to the other by applying a recursive permutation. So this is sort of like kind of something quite closely related. Here you look at the action of R not on 2 to the n, but rather on all permutations of n, all the functions from n to the n. Here you look at the function of 2 to the n. And this is also an open problem which has been around for quite a while. is the concept of recursive isomorphism of binary of subsets of the integer or binary sequences universal? Now, it has been shown, some results along these lines are known, it has been shown that if instead of using 2 you use n, the answer is yes. So the action of the group of recursive isomorphisms on n to the n is universal. And more recently, Andretta, Camerlo, and Yost proved that the answer is yes for x equals phi or higher. The actions on phi to the n by recursive permutation is universal. And this starts looking awfully close to the problem about the action of R on recursive on permutations. So if you use arbitrary functions on n to the n, the answer is yes. What it really wants to look at is either the action of R on n to the n, the subset of n to the n, which consists of the one-to-one functions, or even more, the permutations. And so this gets awfully close to these problems which arise from recursion theory. And another question along these lines, which is completely open, is whether Turing equivalence is universal. So this is the sort of the classical notion in recursion. The standard notion is classical recursion theory, two subsets of the integers being computable from each other. This account of equivalence relation, is it universal or not? And again, there is a related result due to Slayman and Steele here that if you replace recursive, Turing equivalence by arithmetic equivalence, the answer is yes. And then finally, the last question is that you would solve this problem and many other problems if you could solve positively this problem. In other words, this was raised by George. It is quite easy to see that the Turing equivalence relation contains a sub-equivalence relation to the universal, for example, the shift of the two. It is unknown, although, it's another sort of very, very simple to state problem, which seems intractable at the stage. Is it, if an equivalence relation contains the universal, or does it have to be universal itself? So that's the last problem I want to raise here.